Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Kof Tet Vav, we're on Kof Yod Dalet Amud Bet, the Mishnah. Hamakir Kelav Usfara Biyad Acher, Vyasa Lo Shem Geneva Ba'ir, Yishava Lo Alokeach, Kama Natan Vitol. Vim Lav, Lav Kol Hemenu, Shani Omer, Mecharan Acher Ulkachan Ze Hemenu. Someone who recognizes his book or scroll in the hands of someone else. Let's call this someone who recognizes it Reuven. Reuven owns a scroll of Sefer Yeshaya, and he's walking around in the Bet Midrash. He sees someone else is using his scroll. Is what's going on here? This is why I bought it. I bought it from that person, whatever. In addition, the Reuven, there's a rumor that's spreading around that some stuff was stolen from Reuven in the city. If you have both of these two factors together, then the Reuven, the recognizer, can go to that person who's using it. He's the lokeach, he's a buyer. And the assumption is someone stole it from Reuven and sold it to this guy who's using it, so the buyer. So the buyer has to swear, how much did he pay for it? He says, I paid $100. Then the Reuven can buy his item back for $100, and then he goes after the thief. He can't just take the item because the buyer, not knowing that it's stolen, paid for it. And so we want their people to be able to buy things with some insurance that if they buy an item, it's not going to be taken away from them because it's stolen. Well, Gemara will talk about this more. So therefore, since he recognize as his, and also that there was a rumor that went around that his house got robbed. But if not, if there's no rumor, then we do not believe Reuven to say that it's his, because this buyer could say, oh, Reuven sold it to someone else, and I bought it from that person. Just because it's his, I agree, it was originally his. This Sefer Yeshaya maybe even has his name on it, right? This belonged to. I agree, it did belong to Reuven, sold it, now I bought it. He's not taking it from me, I bought it fair and square, he doesn't have a right. But if in addition there was a rumor that Reuven's house was burglarized, then that adds to the probability that in fact it was stolen, and therefore, although the buyer has the right to get paid, he can't just keep it. The buyer has to give it up because it belongs to Reuven, and then Reuven will go ahead and try to find the burglar and get the money back from him. Now we ask, all right, so what if there's a rumor in the city that his house was burglarized? Maybe Reuven, in fact, sold the item himself, and then he felt bad after he sold it. So he spread a rumor. You don't need Instagram to spread false rumors. Even in a little village, you just go around saying, oh, my house was burglarized. That one tells someone else. You don't even know where the rumor started. So maybe he started the rumor so that he could then go to the buyer and say, oh, that was mine. You bought it from a robber, so he can get it back. So why should we trust him? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, kegon shebao bnei adam betoch beto ve'amad v'yifgin ba'layla ve'amad nignevu kelai. Rav says, we're talking about a case where there were guests in this guy's Reuven's house. He had some guests over, and they stayed around, and then they slept over. And then in the middle of the night, Reuven says, oh, someone broke into my house, or they were already in my house. These people who were staying by me, they stole my items. So we're talking about a case where there was a whole scene that there were people, and he was yelling at that in the middle of the night. So that's how we know that it's not just a rumor that he made up. But then we ask, Kol Sheken, Ila Masa. In that case also, maybe he created this whole ruckus as a pretext, right? He happened to have some people over, or maybe he brought people over and invited them as guests, and then went outside yelling, oh, these people stole my things. And they did that, Reuven did that, all just so that he could then go back and buy back an item that he sold that now he didn't want to sell. So just because he's screaming in the street doesn't mean anything. Rav Kahana meseyem ba mishemei de Rav kegon shaita machteret chatura betoch beto bnei adam shelanu betoch beto yasu ve'anbur kera'ot shel kelim al kitfehem ve'kol omerim nignebu kelav shel ploni. Rather, the plot thickens. And Rav explains that this Mishnah is only true in a case where there was also a tunnel dug under the person's house, and these guests that were staying there, they're the ones that dug a tunnel under the house, and they had bundles of vessels on their shoulders, and people saw them, and so then it was clear to everyone that said, "Oh, this guy, his house was burglarized by these guests who dug a tunnel. Why they dug a tunnel if they were inside? I guess they wanted to get out undetected, so they didn't want to just open the door. So they went under the house and they were got out by the sewer or something. V'dilma kelim havu sefarim lahavu. Okay, even in that case where seems pretty clear that this guy was burglarized, how do you know what they took? People only said that, oh, they took vessels. So that means they took vessels. How do you know they took scrolls? Oh, it's talking about when the people were talking about it. They said, yeah, we saw them take bags of vessels and bags of scrolls. They said that too. Maybe when they said scrolls, they meant the small scrolls. But he's coming and claiming, hey, this Sefer Yeshaya, which is a large scroll. So maybe it's not the same scroll that people saw stolen. And so now the Uven is using this as opportunity to get back some large scroll that he had legitimately sold. No, we're talking about a case where the rumor and people saw that he took this particular scroll, a Sefer Yeshaya, right? We saw the people that were his guests go from under the tunnel, and we saw that he stole a Sefer Yeshaya. Yeah, but maybe it's not the same Sefer Yeshua. Maybe the ones that they stole were old copies, not worth as much. And the one that he is trying to get back is a new copy that's worth more. Amarav kegonda amri halalu kelav shelponi halalu sefarav shelponi. So Rav says, oh, in addition to a case where people know and said, oh, this belongs to Reuven. This is a particular one that he stole. This Sefer Yeshaya, in fact. So we have that particular level of knowledge. So therefore, it's not possible that Reuven just made up the whole scene. There were people in his house staying there. They made a tunnel, ran out. People saw them carrying bags, saw them with scrolls, this particular scroll. So yeah, then Rav can go and get it back. And then Reuven can go get it back. Wait a second. Would Rav really think that in that such a case, the thief would have to pay? Rav said, if someone digs a tunnel and took something and he left, he doesn't have to pay. Why? Because he bought it with his life. The law of someone who comes in Baba Machteret is that because he's coming in the night, we assume if the homeowner would confront him, then the thief would be violent, and therefore he can put the homeowner can protect his life and kill the person who comes tunneling in the night. Now, at that time, when he's liable to death, even if he's not actually killed, still he potentially could be killed. So he's already liable to death. And there's a law that if you get the death penalty, you don't also have to pay. This person deserves a death penalty. He's liable to death. Even if he gets out safely, he still does not have to pay. And therefore, this thief got away with it, but would not have to pay. So how could Reuven go and make him pay? He legitimately owns it. And if the thief legitimately owns it, then if the thief sold it, then it's a good sale. And Reuven cannot get the item back. And the answer is hane mele de kanan hu bebaba machteret de mikara masad nafshel k'tala. Aval hane kevan de la masru nafshay liktala la. Oh, that's only talking about someone who acquires something because he's tunneling into the house and he's giving himself over to potentially to be killed, because that's dangerous. But in our case, we were talking about, remember, guests that were already staying in the house. I don't know, he got some guests, he didn't know them very well, I guess. And it turns out the guests were thieves and they tunneled out of the house. So in that case, those thieves were not putting their life on the line, because if the homeowner found them, he wouldn't kill them. He would not say, oh, these are my guests. Hey guys, what are you doing with those suitcases there? And so since they didn't risk their lives, because they were already in the house, And they were there with permission. Therefore, they do have to pay. They are really thieves, and those thieves will have to pay if they get caught. And if they sell the item, the sale is not a valid sale, and the buyer has to give the item back, although the owner will pay them for it and then get money from the thief. Rav says, all this that we've been saying, all these requirements that you can only take the item and can only take that his Sefer Yeshaya, if it fulfills all those requirements that we said before, that's only about talking about a homeowner who generally sells his items, right? Person always has garage sales, always selling items. So then we have to worry, maybe this is sold, not stolen. But if you have a homeowner who never sells his items, he never makes garage sales, he doesn't sell things out of his house, then we don't have to worry all that much. If we have a rumor that his house was burglarized, and he says, this is mine, then that's sufficient. He doesn't have to go and prove all those assumptions before, because it's not very likely that he legitimately sold it, because he doesn't sell things from his house. Maybe he doesn't usually sell, but maybe he was short on cash. He needed some money, and that's why he sold it that time. So it could be that he really wasn't stolen. So Rav Asher explains, that's why we need a rumor to spread in the city that he was burglarized, otherwise not. So in other words, you can't, a person in Reuven, even if he never sells things in his house, he can't just go to a person in Beit Midrash, that's my Sefer Yeshaya that you're using, right? Swear to me, how much did you buy it for, and then give it to me. I could say, no, I don't know, maybe you sold it to someone, to sell to someone else. Oh, it's true, he doesn't usually sell things. Okay, maybe he needed some cash that time and he sold some. So he can't just do it unless there's also a rumor. Then if he doesn't usually sell things, but there is a rumor that he was burglarized, then he can go and take that his item back, pay for it, and then hopefully find the thief. Itmar ganav umachar v'achar kach hukar haganav. Rab mishmed Rabbi Chiya amar hadin aim ha rishon. Rabbi Yochanan mishmed Rabbi Anai amar hadin aim hashenim. Someone who stole an item and sold it, and afterwards the thief was recognized. So now the owner, the original owner, he has there's two people he could collect from: the thief, right? He could sue the thief and say, "Hey, you give me." Or since the thief sold it to someone else, and that's the buyer, we'll call him, and the buyer, it's not really his because he bought it from a thief, so the owner could go to the thief. So that's the machloket that we're going to be dealing with for the next while. Who can the owner go to? So Rav in the name of Bichia said that the owner can pursue the first, meaning the thief himself, the first guy who took it. Hey, give me my money back. But he can't go to the buyer. Rabbi Yochanan said, name it to be Anai, that the owner can go to the buyer and say, give me my item back. He means also he can go to the buyer or to the thief. So this is the machloket. Rav says he only can go to the thief, and Rabbi Yochanan says he can go to both of them. Amar Rav Yosef, la pelige kan lifnei yeush hadin im hasheni, kan achar yeush hadin im harishon. Rav Yosef says that Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are not in fact arguing. When Rabbi Yochanan says you can go to the buyer also, that's because there was no yeush. The original owner did not despair on giving it up. If he did not despair, the original owner retains ownership over it the entire time. And so therefore, he can go to, obviously can go to the thief who stole it, and he can also go to the buyer because the buyer didn't buy anything. It doesn't belong to the thief to sell in the first place. So that's why he can go to both. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Whereas Rav, who said you go to the first, that's talking about where the original owner despaired. And since he despaired, he can still go to the thief to say, hey, can you pay me back? You know, the thief always has to pay back what he stole. But the buyer, since the original owner already despaired, and now the thief is now changing hands when he gives it over to the buyer. So, yeush. And a change in possession. So now the buyer legitimately owns it, and that's why the owner cannot go after the thief. But in fact, there's so Rav and Rabbi Yochanan agree that just talking about two different scenarios. Rav and Rabbi Yochanan both agree with the ruling of Rav Chista that we saw a few dapim ago, that if there's no yeush, then the owner can go to either party, either the thief or the buyer. All right, that's what Rav Chisda said a while ago, and in fact, everybody would agree with that. Abaye says, really, is that true that everybody agrees with Rabbi Yochanan? I don't think everybody with Rav Chisda. I don't think everybody would agree with Rav Chisda. And here is my proof. Ha matenot keuna kelifnei yeush dameh. Gifts that you have to give to Kohanim, or it's as if it's before Yeush. If someone has to give a gift to Kohanim, like when you do Shechita, there's certain parts of the animal that you always have to give, that you have to give to the Kohanim. Now, even if one particular Kohen says, he didn't give it to me. I don't know, he sold it to someone else. All right, forget about it. I don't think I'm going to get it. But it doesn't go only to that Kohen. It goes to all Kohen. All Kohanim have a right to those gifts. Whoever is doing the Shechita, whoever owns the animal, can choose which Kohen to give it to. But it doesn't matter. Even if one particular Kohen gives up, despairs on getting it, another Kohen, you need every Kohen in the world to despair, which is not going to happen. So this is a general rule, that any gifts that go to Kohanim, no matter what, there's no despair, no such thing. Okay, so this is going to be equivalent of no despair. Upilige, and look here, there is a machloket on this case. De Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Masechet Chulin. Amar lo mecholi ma'aha me'aha shel para. Ve'hayu ba matanot notan lekohen ve'eno menakeh lo min hadamim. Lakach amenu b'mishkal notan lekohen u'menakeh lo min hadamim. A customer comes to a butcher and says, sell me the innards of this cow. He doesn't specify a weight, just give me all the innards. And so the butcher gives him all the innards, and within that are parts that have to be given to the Kohen. So then the customer, the buyer, has to give it to the Kohen, and let's say the purchase price was $10 for all this, the buyer has to give the full $10 to the butcher, even though within that there were parts of it that they had to give to a Kohen, because he said, give me the whole thing. So then within that, it's reasonable to say that there's going to be parts he has to give to a Kohen. He's paying the $10 for the edible parts that he can keep. However, if he bought it according to pounds, he said, give me 10 pounds of meat for $10. And then the butcher included within the 10 pounds parts that have to be given to the Kohen. So now this is a problem. The customer paid for something that he can't use. In that case, I'll say $2 worth of it. Now, in that case, the customer has to give those sections to the Kohen, because that's a requirement. But since he paid for them and he can't use them, so he can go to the butcher and say, I'm only paying you $8 because you gave me something that I had to give to the Kohen. Okay, the equivalent here is the Kohen's like the original owner. The butcher is like the thief, and the buyer is like the buyer. And so, let's see. Ve'amar Rav, lo shenu ela sheshakal le'atzmo, aval shakal lo hatabach, hadin im hatabach. Rav says, this law only applies where the customer waited out himself. If he waited out himself, so then the customer is the one that put in the innards there. And so he made that mistake. So that's why he has to go and give it to the Kohen. It's as if saying the Kohen could sue that buyer, right? Kohen could say, hey, what's that meat there? Look at that in there. That belongs to me. Oh yeah, you're right. I give it over. Although he doesn't have to pay for it when he goes back to the butcher, he could give him less. That's what this halakha is talking about. However, if the butcher is the one that weighed it out, he's the one that put it on, that took the pieces and put them on the scale, then the customer does not have to give those pieces to the Kohen. Rather, the Kohen can only sue the butcher, meaning that he can sue the butcher because the butcher is the thief. Now, the butcher sold it to the buyer. Okay, once he did that, that's it. The buyer can say, oh, he sold it to me, now it's mine. You have a claim? Go to the butcher. He's the thief. What do you see here? That according to Rav, this is a case of lifnei yeush, because we said Kohanim never don't have the possibility as a class to all have yeush. So this is a case of that it's before yeush. And nevertheless, the owner, meaning the Kohen, can only go to the thief, meaning the butcher, and cannot go to the buyer. But you just said that's Abaye's proof. And this is a challenge to Rav Yosef, who said that everyone agrees that if it's before Yeush, then the owner can go to either party, even whether to the thief or to the buyer. Here, he can't. He can only go to the thief and not to the buyer. That's a challenge. To answer it, Emma afdin im hatavach. Oh, no. To answer Abaya's question, when it says that, when Rav said, hadin im hatavach, he means he can also go to the butcher. Doesn't mean only to the butcher. In fact, he can go to both. If the lifnei yeush, so he can go. He can even go to the butcher, and also he can go to the buyer. Yes, it is in fact both. What's the chidush? Ma'odetema en matanot keunan nigzalot kamashmalan. You might have thought that gifts that are owed to the kohen cannot be stolen. In other words, they're so significant that no matter where they are or what you do with them, they belong to the kohen. Therefore, even if the butcher himself weighed the meat and then sold it to the buyer, the kohen cannot go after the butcher, because the butcher would say, oh, you want your items? I don't have them. They're over there, right? The buyer has them. Go to the buyer. So he has to go to the buyer because it's impossible to steal them. It's not that the butcher doesn't even owe them to give them over. You're just there. They belong to the kohen wherever they are. So therefore, you might have thought that the kohen can only go to the buyer because that's where the items are that belong to him. So that's why Rav has to teach, that he can go, even in this case, he can go to both collect it from either the buyer or the butcher. Ul Abaye damar pelige b'may pelige b'Rav Chista. Now, according to Abaye, who challenged Rav Yosef in the first place, so Rav Yosef has one explanation, all right? And now Abaye, who challenged Rav Yosef, what does he think is at the basis of the machloket between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan? Mike pelige b'Rav Chista. They're arguing about the very principle of Rav Chista. Rav Chista said that if it's before Yeush, and there's no Yeush the whole time, and the thief sells it to someone else, then the owner can go collect it from either the thief or the buyer. Rabbi Yochanan agrees with that. That's exactly what he says. Rav disagrees with that principle, and he thinks that you can only go to the thief, not to the buyer, which is exactly what he said, even before Yeush. All right, so now we have two explanations for the machloket. Now we're going to see a third. Rav Zevid amar, kegon shenitjashu ha-be'alim b'yad lokeach, ve'lo nitjashu b'yad ha-ganav. Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing only in the following case, where the owner despaired while it was in the hands of the buyer, but not before that, not when it was in the hands of the ganav. Someone stole an item, and the original owner says, I'm going to find it, I'm going to get it back. And that still, at that time, but while he has no yeush, he sells it to the buyer. So now it's in the hands of the buyer. And after it's in the hands of the buyer, then enough time passed that the owner says, you know what, forget it, I'm never going to find it. So there is both yeush and there is shinui reshut. There's a transfer of possession. But here's the machloket b'hapim b'hilige. Mor sabar, Rabbi Yochanan thinks, yeush v'achar kach shinui reshut kane, shinui reshut v'achar kach yeush la kane. That if you have yeush and then shinui and then a transfer, then that is a proper sale. In other words, if you had yeush first, and then if it was stolen, and the owner immediately despairs, and then it's sold, so then that's a proper sale, and that in such a case, the original owner cannot go after the buyer, but can only go after the thief. However, if, like in this case, you have there was no yeush, and first there was a transfer when he gave it to the buyer, and only afterwards there's yeush, that does not count, and that's not a legitimate sale. So that's why, according to Rabbi Yochanan, since we're talking about that very case, and there was no legitimate sale, so the buyer is not really his. That's why the owner can go after either the buyer or the thief. However, Rav Mor Savar Lo Shena. Rav says it doesn't matter what order they're in, as long as we just check off the boxes. Is there yeush? Yes, there is yeush. Was there a transfer of possession? Yes, there was. Now, even though the transfer of possession happened first, and only afterwards the yeush, doesn't matter. You have both things. So, therefore, Rav says, since in this case you have both items, that sale was a legitimate sale, and the buyer keeps it. Maybe at the time of the sale it wasn't legitimate because there wasn't yet yeush. But once there is yeush, now the buyer has it fair and square, and that's why, according to Rav, the original owner cannot go after the buyer, but only after the thief. The Papa now gives a fourth explanation. It says third here, but we already saw three. This is actually the fourth explanation of it. Amar begilima de kula amala peligia de hadad lemare v'acha be'asu bo takanat hashu kami palge. The item that was stolen, let's say it's a cloak, doesn't matter what it is. Everyone agrees that it goes back to the original owner. The original owner, a thief, stole his cloak, and then the thief sold it to someone else. So that buyer obviously has to return the cloak to its owner. Everyone agrees to that. However, the question is regarding takanat hashuk. Do we have this enactment regarding the marketplace? The enactment regarding the marketplace means that if a buyer buys stolen items unknowingly, then the buyer has a right to get the money back, even from the owner. Why? Because we want to make sure that the marketplace runs. If every time you buy something, you're going to worry that, oh, this was stolen, and the original owner is going to come and just take it, and not pay the buyer for it, then no one's going to want to buy anything. So we say the thief is responsible, but the original buyer has to pay to get back the item, and then go find the thief if the thief is available, right? Go get the money from the thief, if we assuming that we know who the thief is. Rab Mishmed Rabbi Chiya Amar Hadin Im Harishon Dina De Lokech De Lishkol Zuzeh Miganav Velo Asu Bo Takanat Hashuk. So Rab named Rabbi Chiya, he says Hadin Im Harishon. So it's different interpretation altogether than what we said before. Before, the question is, who can the original owner go to? The first thief or the second, meaning the second thief, meaning the buyer? But here it's actually referring to the Rishon is who the buyer bought it from. That means the thief. So the buyer can go and get money from the thief, but he cannot get it from the original owner. The law is that the buyer will go get money from the thief. And there is no takanat hashuk. So in this case, where someone steals a cloak and he gives it over and he sells it to the buyer, the original owner comes and sees this and says, hey, that's my coat, give it to me. He can take it without payment because it's his. We're talking about a case where there's no Yeush, and everybody agrees with Rav Chista. He has no Yeush, he can get it back. And now the owner, the buyer, he will have to go get it only, he can only collect money from the thief. The buyer can not only go to the thief and get the money, he can also go to the owner and get the money. The owner takes his cloak, and so the buyer can say, listen, I bought it fair and square. I mean, I bought it. I thought I was honest, and there's takanat hashuk that you have to pay me so that we will ensure that buyers will be protected. And so that's what Rabbi Yochanan says. He can get it also from the owner. That's what the machloket of Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are about. We ask, v'sabadav lo asu bo takanat hashuk. Really, Rav does not have this enactment regarding the marketplace. V'had Rav Huna talmidei de Rav Hava. Rav Huna is a student of Rav. And in the following case, Rav Huna gave a ruling that assumed that we do follow the takanat hashuk. V'chanan bisha ganav gilima v'zabena. We met this guy before. Hanan the evil one. He was the one that he had to pay someone half a peruta for slapping him, but he only had a peruta, didn't have change. So instead of just giving the whole peruta, he says, okay, I'll slap him again. That way, he got his money's worth of what he was paying. All right, that's who we're dealing with. So he was notorious for doing all kinds of shenanigans, and he stole someone's cloak and he resold it. So the case came to Rav Huna, and Rav Huna said to the victim, go and redeem your pledge. Meaning, yes, you could get your coat back, that's for sure. Everyone agrees that it's his coat, he gets it. But Rav Huna told the owner that he has to pay the buyer directly. That follows Rabbi Yochanan, that he can go two steps. The buyer can go to the original owner. And that seems to assume that there is a takanat hashuk, that the buyer's payment is guaranteed by the owner. So how come Rav Huna, even though he's a student of Rav, assumed that there is takanat hashuk? And the answer is, Shanechanan Bisha kevandeleka dileish talume mine kelohu kardame. Hanan Bisha is different because there's no way you're going to get paid from him. First of all, he has no money. And second of all, he's a tough guy. No one's going to get money from him anyway. So therefore, it's as if he was not identified. In the case where the thief was not identified, so then everyone agrees. The buyer has no recourse. course, to get it from the thief. In that case, everyone would agree that the thief can, the buyer can get it, can be repaid from the owner. So that's what I was talking about. And even Rav would agree when there is no, the thief is not caught and unknown, that the owner gets his cloak but has to pay for it. And therefore, even though here we know who it is, it's as if we don't know who it is. Amarava. Im ganav meforsam hu lo asu bo takanat hashuk. Even according to those who say that there is takanat hashuk, it doesn't apply if there's a notorious robber. If you are buying something from a notorious robber, then buyer beware. The buyer, you should have known that this is stolen goods, right? You go and buy something on the street corner from a guy who looks shifty and he's about to run away. So then or a well-known guy who's a thief, then the buyer should know that this is stolen goods and should not have bought it. That guy does not have a right to go to the owner and collect the money should the owner take the item. Hold on. But Hanan Bisha is a famous crook. And yet, Rav Huna applied takanat hashuk. Why didn't he tell the buyer, you bought something from Hanan Bisha? Don't you know he's a terrible crook? You should have known and not bought it from him, and therefore you don't have a right to get your money back. And the answer is nehidim for some of the bishuta lignevuta lamefursam. It's true he was well known for his evil, but not specifically for a theft. He would go and hit people twice, punch people, violent, yell at people, whatever. But he wasn't known for stealing, and therefore the assumption was if he bought it from Hanan Bisha, then it was a legitimate sale and not stolen goods. And in this case, it turned out to be stolen goods, but the takanat hashuk still applies to him. Itmar, ganav ufara bechobo, ganav ufara behekefo, lo asu bo takanat hashuk, damri, lo adata dehanhu yehibat le midi. If someone stole and used the stolen item to pay back a loan, right? This guy, he owes somebody $100 and he steals someone's cloak and he uses that to pay back. And then it turns out the owner of the cloak sees it. He goes to this guy and says, hey, that's my jacket. What are you doing with it? He says, oh, this guy, he paid me back with it. Okay, so he has to give back the cloak to the original owner. And we do not say takanat hashuk because the lender did not buy it. He just accepted it as repayment for his loan. And so we say, no, he does not have a right to collect the money from the owner because he did not lend the money having in mind that he would get the cloak in the first place. He lent the money because he trusted this borrower. Good. So you trusted the borrower. The borrower gave you a stolen cloak. Now it turns out stolen. You have to give it back to the owner. And now you're just back to where you were in the first place that he owes you money. So that just like you beforehand, you had to run after him to collect the money. Now turns out he still owes you the money. Go run after him. You don't have to protect. This is not protecting buyers because he's not a buyer. He's a lender. And in the first place, he lent in the first place without collateral, without the knowledge that he would get this cloak. Same thing is hekef. Is the same as borrowing. This is just a store owner who gives someone things, merchandise on credit. So basically, it's just a credit, and then he's owed the money. So it's the same thing as a lender. Mashkanta shave matan b'me'a. Asu bo takanat hashuk. Shave b'shave amemad amad. Lo asu bo takanat hashuk. Mor zutra amad asu bo takanat hashuk. So here you have someone borrowed and gave an item of collateral. Now, so he gave, let's say, a coat as collateral, and the coat's worth 200, and the loan was only 100. That's typical that a person will lend and require a collateral that's more than the amount of the loan. Like when you get a mortgage, if you buy a house for $1 million, no bank is going to give you a whole $1 million. That they want, they'll give you only $500,000 for a house that's worth $1 million. So because they want the collateral to be more. So that's typical. And in this case, there is takanat hashuk if it turns out that collateral had been stolen. So this guy, he stole a coat. And then that was worth 200. He takes the coat to a lender and says, hey, can you lend me money? You can use this collateral. So in this case, the lender only gave the money because he got the coat. And so there is takanat hashuk. We want to protect lenders also, because he wouldn't have given the money if he knew it was stolen. And now, if the owner can just take away that coat without payment, then no one's going to want to lend money, even for collateral. However, if the coat is worth 100 and the loan is worth 100, that's a machloket. Amamad says here we do not say takanat hashuk, and Mozutra says here also we do say takanat hashuk. Amamad says the reason is because if it's even, then that means that the lender is not really relying on the collateral, because usually lenders don't rely on a collateral that's equal. That means the lender was relying on the good faith of the borrower. He just trusted him. And the collateral is a side point. So that's similar to the case before, where there is no collateral and he uses it for repayment after. Since he wasn't relying, and he would have given the money anyway, we assume, therefore, if it turns out to be stolen and the owner comes and takes his coat back, the owner does not have to pay. However, Mozutra says, no, it's a collateral, and he was relying on that when he gave, even if it's a little more unusual to give same amount, nevertheless, he was relying on it, would not have given the loan if not for the collateral, and therefore, he does deserve to get repaid by the original owner when he takes the coat. Vilchata. And halacha is like Morzutra, that there is takanat hashuk in that case. Zivina shaveh b'shaveh asu bo takanat hashuk. Shaveh me'a b'matan. Rav Sheshat amar lo asu bo takanat hashuk. Rav amar asu bo takanat hashuk. If someone buys something for an equal amount of its market value, that's the typical case of the enactment for the sake of the marketplace. If it turns out that item was stolen and the original owner goes and takes it from the buyer, the original owner has to pay the buyer the sale price. As we said in the Mishnah, the buyer swears about how much he paid, and then he gets paid, and then the owner has to go after the thief to get his money back. He spent the money on buying his own item from the buyer, so he has to get it from the thief. That's the typical case. But now, here's the chidush, that if he buys something that's worth 100, this is the buyer, buys something worth the cloak, worth 100, he buys it from the thief, and he paid 200 for it. So in that case, if he's paying 200 for an item worth 100, he's overpaying. So now, are you going to require the original owner, when he finds that, he says, that's my coat, give it back to me. He says, how much did you pay? 200. What, you overpaid? You paid double for this thing, right? So do we require the owner to have to overpay? And Rav Sheshat says, no, lo asu bo takanat hashuk. If the buyer overpaid, it just means that he wanted to give a gift. A lot of times, sometimes you overpay for something because you just want to be nice and give a person a gift, like a lemonade stand scam, right? This is not that glass of watery lemonade, not worth $1, but you buy it to make the kids happy. You don't really care if someone to say, you know, turns out, oh, it was warm, I thought it was cold. You can't get back the money. You can't get back your money because you would just have it had in mind to give it as a gift in the first place. So therefore, Rav Sheshat says, the owner can go and get his coat back. You overpaid double. You just wanted to give him a gift. Forget it. I'm not paying you 200. Whereas Rabba said, no, here's takanat hashuk also. Maybe he overpaid. I don't know. He really liked it, or he got scammed. Whatever the reason is, since he paid 200, so he doesn't deserve to lose it and lose the item, so the owner has to pay that much. And then the thief got the 200, so the owner, hopefully he can get that money back out of the thief. And the halacha is, in all the cases we mentioned, there is takanat hashuk, and the owner has to pay the buyer, except for the very first case when the thief used a stolen item just to pay back a loan or to pay back the store credit, but because that's just paying back a loan that it was an outstanding loan anyway, and the loan was not dependent on this stolen item, so then the takana doshuk doesn't make sense to apply it in those cases. Now some stories. Abimi bar Nazi Hamud Ravina Hava Masik Behu Gabra Arba Azuze. Avimi was owed 4 dinar by a certain guy. Genav Gilima Atyani Hale. That guy who owed him 4 zuz, he went and stole a coat and gave it to Avimi. Ozfe Arba Zuze Acharini. Avimi saw, oh look, this guy's reliable. See, I lent him money and he paid me back this nice coat. You know what? I'm going to lend him again. He says, you know, can I lend again afterwards? Yes, he lent them again. Turns out that this borrower was a thief, and that coat was stolen. So now the case comes to before Ravina. See, the problem is here that it's not easy to figure out. This coat that he gave him, on the one hand, it was repayment for the original loan. And we just said, there's no takanat hashuk for that. So that this Avimi would not get his money back from the original owner of the coat for that. On the other hand, he does lend him afterwards. And so maybe you can connect the coat as and consider it collateral for the next loan that he gives, in which case takanat hashuk would apply. So how should we see this case? Amar Ravina said, "Kama'e ganavu fara bechabo velaba el metav le velamidi hanachal ba'azuzeh acharini shekol zuzach v'hadar gelima." So it's regarding the first dinar that he lent, and then he stole and used it. He stole the coat to pay his four dinar that he owes. So for that, he does not have to give anything in exchange for the garment, because that's what they say. The owner can take his coat and does not have to pay for it, right? That's the law of the loan. However, the second four dinar he gave only because he got this coat. So therefore, you have to return the coat and you can take back the four dinar. That's what Ravina told Avimi. So in fact, the owner of the coat does have to pay for dinar, not for the first four which were alone, but for the second four dinar, which we assume that Avimi only gave him because of that coat. And if he had not given the coat, then he wouldn't give him the second set of four dinar, and therefore takanat hashuk would apply to the second set. Matkif la Rav Kohen. However, Rav Kohen challenged that ruling of Ravina. V'dilma gilima behanezuze kame'e yavina nehale ganavu fara bechobo ganavu fara behekefo farbazuze batre hemune hemne kihechi dehemne meikara. So he says, no, maybe you should see it differently. That the cloak was given to Avimi as payment for the first four dinar. And then the thief stole, repaid his debt, and this is a case of the what we said above, ganav fara bechovo, ganav fara behekefo. So use it to repay a debt, and so that there's no takanat hashuk for the first four. Now the second four was not, Avimi did not give it to him based on the cloak. The cloak was repayment for the first thing. For the second loan, he believed him, just like he believed him the first time around, right? Didn't Avimi give him four dinar without any collateral or anything the first time around? Good, so now you have repayment. That repayment doesn't apply to, because it's only repayment. And the second one is independent, and he just believed him. It wasn't because of the coat. And therefore, the owner should not have to give the Avimi anything at all. Rav Kohen makes sense. Igal gel milta metal kamed ribi Abhu amar hilcheta k'Rav Kohen. And so this challenge, this question circulated. It went to all the rabbis until it got to Ribi Abhu, and he said, Rav Kohen is right. And the owner of that coat does not have to pay anything, because the first four, that was just a repayment of a loan. Okay, so now you didn't get repayment of a loan. You're back where you are in step one. And the second one, he gave him four because he trusted him, not because this was collateral. So he gets nothing. Narsha'a genav sifra, zabenele papuna'a, bitman zuze, azal papuna'a zabenele bar mechoza'a, bime'a ve'esrin zuze, lesof ukar ha'ganav. All right, fun case of someone from Neresh stole a scroll from the owner, the original, we call him the owner of the scroll. This Neresh, he was able to flip it. So he stole it, so he got, you know, for free. And he sold it. He sold it to someone from Papunya, and he got 80. And this guy from Papunya went and he sold it to someone from Mehoza for 120. Okay, good deal. And now they found out, the buyers from all those cities, they didn't know it was a stolen item. So it's only the original thief that is the problem. And he's from Neresh. Okay. So in the end, they caught the thief. And so very good. And now it turns out they let everybody know, listen, that thing that you stole was stolen property. Now the owner certainly deserves to get his item back. Okay, where is it? It's all the way at the last guy. Mechoza has it. So the owner has to go to Mechoza and is going to get the item back from Mechoza. The question is, Takanat Tashuk, the owner has to pay the buyer for it. But here, there's three buyers, one for 80, one, well, there's two buyers, one for 80 and one for 120. So who does he have to pay and how much? Amar Abaye lezil mare de sifra v'yahavle lebar mechoza temanan zuze v'shakil sifre v'azil bar mechoza v'shakil arba'in mipapuna am. So Abaye ruled and said the original owner of the scroll should go to the guy from mechoza. And the guy from mechoza, he's the one that has the scroll, and he has to give it back to the owner. But the owner has to pay him how much? 80. Now, even though the guy from Mechoza paid 120, but that's not the owner's problem. The thief sold it to the first buyer for 80. So therefore, the owner says, I'm only paying you what the original thief sold it for, which was 80. And now you, the guy from Mechoza, the last buyer, it's his responsibility to go to the guy from Papunya and collect the 40. That's what he ruled. However, Matkif la Rava challenged it. Hashta loker mi ganav asu bo takanat hashuk. Loker mi lokech mi ba'ya. Rava says, we made an enactment regarding someone who buys something from a thief, that you have to pay back that buyer, so people will buy things. If we made a takana for someone who buys from a thief, all the more so the takana should apply to someone who buys from another buyer, and therefore the second buyer who bought it for 120 also should be protected, and he shouldn't have to go run after someone else to get his 40. Ela amar Rava, lezil mare de sifra v'yahiv le lebar mechoza'a me'av esrin zuze v'shakil sifre. Rather, the owner has to go to the guy from Mechoza, who has it now, take his scroll, and he has to pay 120, so that the guy from Mechoza will be protected. Good, he's made whole. Velezil mare de sifra velishkol arbein mipuna'a utmanan mi nar sha'a. And then the owner of the scroll, he can go to the guy from Pepunya who got 120 and paid 80. So he was up 40, so we can take 40 from that guy. And then the original thief from Narsha'a, he can get 80 from him if he can find him and get the money out of him. So that's the owner's responsibility to run after all these people. And that way, both buyers, both the one for 80 and the one for 120, will both be protected and get their money back. And that way, people in the future will feel safe and buying items and not have to worry that it's a stolen item and then it will be taken away from them for nothing. Next Mishnah, Zeba b'chavito shel yayim v'zeba b'chado shel devash. Nisteka chavit shel devash v'shafach ze et yeno v'sila et ha-devash letocho. You have two people, one has a barrel of wine and one has a barrel of honey. Honey is worth more than wine. Now the barrel of honey, it got a hole in it, and it's all pouring out. So the guy who owns the barrel of wine, he's a good guy, and he pours out his wine and saves all of the honey in his own barrel. En lo ela sechado. Now the owner of the wine, he comes and says, hey, can you pay me for my loss? The law is that the owner of the honey only has to pay for the wages. How long did it take you to do this? You know, half hour? All right, I'll pay you for a half hour of work, for labor, but does not have to pay him for the wine. However, if before the owner of the wine barrel said a stipulation, listen, I will save your honey if you pay me for the wine that I will spill out. And he says, yeah, okay, fine. Then he has to pay. Then the owner of the honey does have to pay the owner of the wine for the wine that was spilled out. Shataf nachal hamoro vechamoro vechamor shachavero. Another example that's the same principle. You have a river comes and washes away two donkeys belonging to two different people. Shelo yafem anev shel chavero matayim. His own donkey is worth 100, but his friend, fancier donkey, is worth 200. V'yanech ze et shelo v'sil et shel chavero. The guy who owns a donkey worth 100 leaves. He can only save one of them. It's like lifeboat ethics, but for donkeys. So he only can save one of them. So he saves his friend's that's worth 200. So now he comes, hey, I saved yours, it's 200. And lo ela secharo, he can only demand to pay the wages as a worker. It took him an hour to go and save this, and he had to work hard. All right, how much would a worker that does that kind of labor get paid? That's it. But the 200 guy does not have to pay for the value of the donkey of the 100 guy. He loses out. However, if he stipulates before, listen, I'll save yours that's worth 200 as long as you pay me the value of mine that's only worth 100, then the 200 guy does have to pay 100 to the owner of the donkey that was worth 100. We ask, Ve'amai, why does the owner of the wine barrel only collect basic wages? Not only should the owner of the wine barrel be able to collect a number amount of wine, even more than that, the honey should be considered hefked, ownerless. It's all dripping out, right, of this. And so basically at that point, there's no hope that it's going to be saved. It's all going to fall on the floor. And so the owner of the honey already, while still pouring out, says, ah, forget about it. It's all lost. And therefore, the owner of the wine barrel who pours out his wine and saves the honey, it's like he's taking it from hefked. He should be able to take all of the honey home with him and not give the owner of the honey barrel anything. So in fact, the wine barrel guy should even be able to benefit and keep the honey. Why are you saying that? No, not only doesn't get the honey, he doesn't get paid for wine, he only gets basic wages. And now we're going to prove that a barrel that's leaking is considered hefker. Mila tanya, haresh haya ta'un kadei yayin v'kadei shemen v'ra'a shehen mishtaberot. Lo yomar harezeh terumah ma'aser ha'perot sheyesh li b'toch beti, v'yamamar lo amar kelum. We have a braita that says someone who has is carrying jugs of wine and jugs of oil, and now they're breaking and everything's leaking all over. So he says, I have an idea. I want to designate this wine and this oil as teruma for produce that I have in my house. And that way, he won't have to separate from that produce, teruma, and give it to the kohen. This will be the teruma. Yeah, it's all leaking on the ground. Okay, then the kohen will lose out, and he won't have to lose out. Okay, sounds like a smart idea, but it doesn't work. It's as if he said nothing, because it's considered already hefker. You can't use hefker produce you can't designate something that's hefker as teruma maaser for other produce that you own. And so you see here, it doesn't work. And the point is that if a leaking barrel is considered hefker, therefore the owner of the wine barrel should be able to keep the honey. Kedamar b'Yirmiya, kesheikel bet habad karuch aleha, chinami, kesheikel bet habad karuch aleha. We can answer as Yirmiya said in a different case. We're about to see the original context that Yirmiya said this in. Now he said that we're talking about a case where the basket of an olive press, here's an olive press, and they would put the olives in these baskets so that as they get squeezed down by this heavy lever and rocks, the extra juice that would all get smashed out of it would go into the baskets and then they would drip down. So it was talking about a case where, yes, true, you had a barrel and the barrel had a hole in it, it was leaking, but it was held together by a basket, by a net. And so it wasn't going to break all together and everything fall out. It was just leaky, but he wasn't really going to lose it all. So here too, in the Mishnah, that's what it's talking about, that the owner of the honey jar, he wasn't going to lose everything altogether. It was just leaking a little bit, and therefore it's not hefker. But you're right, if in fact it was leaking a lot and the owner gave up, forget it, I'm not going to salvage any of it, then it would be hefker, and then the wine guy could just go take it home. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about where it's only leaking a little bit, it's being held together by the net. Now back to that baraita about designating terumah maaser on something that is going to get ruined anyway. So this baraita said it's no good. Lecha techila, can't do it. And even b'diavad, if he did it, It's nothing. It's not considered Terumah Maaser. He's going to have to go take another Terumah Maaser on that produce at home. So now we're going to turn to attention on that, because that's very interesting. Is that true that it's he said nothing? V'hatanya. Mi sheba baderech u'ma'ot b'yado v'anas kenegdo lo yomar harei perot sheyesh li betoch beti mechulalim ma'ot halalu v'imamar devarav kayamin. We have a braita that someone who's walking on the way and he has some money in his hand, and all of a sudden a tough guy is coming the other way, who's going to steal his money. He suspects, he can see that these guys are thieves, he's going to steal the money. So he has a smart idea. He says, listen, I have a produce at home that is ma'aser sheni produce, and I'm going to have to redeem it for money anyway. So you know what? I'll say right now that produce that I have at home should become desacralized onto this money. And that way, the produce he has at home, he could eat anywhere. He doesn't have to take it to Jerusalem. And then, if the money gets stolen, so the ma'aser sheni is at a loss. But that money he would have had to take to Jerusalem and eat there, and consume it all there in a short time. So now it'll be the ma'aser sheni loss, but he gains the produce that he has at home that he can use for anything. So here it says he should not say that lechatechila v'mamar devarav kaimin, but b'diavad, if he did say it, then it works. So we have a problem. Up above the braita said even b'diavad it doesn't work, and here we said b'diavad it does work. How can we answer? Hachav maskinan b'sheichol hasielo. This case of the tough guy walking towards him is if he is capable of saving his money from the guy. He can hide it, he can run away, he can fight back, and he'll be able to save it. And so really, he could hold on to the money, and that's why it's a valid statement. Hold on. If he can save it, then why about if he has money and he's expecting that he's gonna hold on to this money, then lechatechila should be able to say, I want that produce to be the maaser sheni hekdesh to go on these coins. So why can't he do it lechatechila? Yeah, he can save it, but it's going to be with great difficulty. He's going to have to, you know, really run fast show a lot of courage to stand up to these guys. So it's not easy. The likelihood is that they're going to take the money from him. Therefore, lechatechila shouldn't. But it is possible he'll be able to save it, and therefore, b'diavad, it's okay. Is that true that any time the item is likely to be lost, that lechetechila one cannot designate it as teruma or ma'aser? Right, in the case above, since it's likely that he's going to lose these coins, although there is some chance that he might be able to keep them, but most likely they're going to get lost, and therefore the source above said lechetechila, you cannot designate them for ma'aser sheni. Is that true all the time? Look at the following case. V'atanya hare shayu lo eser chaviot shel tevel tameh, v'ra achat mehen shenishtabera o shenitgaleta, omer harehi terumat maaser al tesha chavroteha. Here's a case where one can designate something lechatechila. What's the case? A person has 10 barrels of tebel, that's tameh. We're talking about a Levi. He received maaser rishon. So now, but he still has to take terumat maaser. He has to take a tenth of these barrels, that's one of these 10 barrels, and we'll have to give it to a kohen as terumat maaser. So right now it's tebel until he designates one of them, and then now it's tameh. Even though it's tameh, as maaser rishon, the Levi is allowed to eat maaser rishon, that's tameh. So that'll be okay for him. The problem is that the terumah that he gives to the kohen is going to be terumah teme'ah. Terumah teme'ah may not be eaten or drunk, but the kohen is allowed to get benefit out of it. If it's oil, we'll talk about that in a second, then he can burn it. And if it's wine, he still could use it as fragrance to pour on it, to put on the floor of his house to make it smell nice. So here it's tebel tameh, and now he sees that one of them is broken and is leaking, or it was left open, and then in those days they were afraid that liquid that's exposed, a snake could have put his venom in it, and so now it's totally ruined, and he won't be, the Levi, well, is not going to be able to benefit from use that at all, anymore. So he says, okay, but it's still there. It didn't all leak out yet. You know what? I have an idea. I'm going to make that designate that barrel to be the Terumat Maaser for the other nine. And then the Kohen will lose out and I'll be okay. So says he can do that. He is permitted to do that. And here, even though it's going to be mostly lost, at most he'll be, the Kohen can use it just for fragrance if it's wine. Nevertheless, even though it's going to be lost, he is permitted to lechetechila designate it as such. Now, so that's the question. Now, as a side point, if it's oil and it's being drained out, then he cannot do so lechetechila, because there the Kohen is losing out something significant. The burning oil, even though it's maybe less valuable than eating the oil, nevertheless, that's a fuel for oil, for fuel still is still very significant and expensive. And so there he cannot, because there he's making the Kohen lose out a significant amount. So that he can, that he cannot. But if there's just a little bit of loss, the little bit of loss here, we're equating to the likelihood that the coins will be lost altogether. So a small amount of definite loss is considered similar to a possibility of a large loss. So that's where we're equating these two cases. Anyway, here up above, you said lechetechila, you could not do it. And here, lechetechila, it's okay. This is the original place where Irmiya said this, that we're talking about a case where there is a basket around the barrel, and so actually it won't be totally lost. That's why he's permitted lechatechila to say, you know what, this will go to the Kohen, because it's going to leak out a little, but most of it will be there. And that's why lechetechila, he can designate it. All right, fine. Bishlama nishbara chazya, ela nitgaleta lemai chazya. The net will help if it's a broken barrel, and it won't crack altogether, and there'll still be some of the wine or produce left. But if it's exposed, if the wine is exposed, what is it good for? Well, you can't use wine you can't drink it anyway, because it's tameh. And now it also has venom in it. What could you use it for? And you say, well, maybe you could still sprinkle it on the floor to give a good aroma in your house. No, you can't do that either. Water that was exposed and there may be venom in it, one is not allowed to pour it, not even in the public domain, because it's still dangerous. You can't mix clay with it, it's still dangerous. You can't settle dust with it by sprinkling in the house, and it'll make the dust go down and use it to clean. You can't even give it to an animal, nor your friend's animal, to drink. It's not good for the animal. And also, if you slaughter the animal, eat the meat, then the venom, you can have it. So really, you cannot use it for anything. So what use would it have at all? And the answer is, he strained it, as according to Rabbi Nechemiah's opinion, the Tanya. In this paraita, Tanakama says that straining does not help for exposure. The venom is still going to be in it. But Ibn Nechemiah says, when is that true that straining is still a problem of exposure? Only if that we're assuming that you're straining by taking the vessel that has the wine exposed liquid in it and pouring it into a vessel underneath. Now, if the vessel underneath is itself uncovered, exposed, then yeah, I agree, that's no good, because now it's just going from one exposure to another exposed vessel. But if you cover the bottom one, even though the top one is exposed, then there's no problem. And you're going to put some kind of strainer there. It'll take out the venom, and the bottom was exposed, it's protected. And so that's okay, because venom of a snake is like a sponge, meaning it floats, stays in place, and it won't go down into the bottom one. So you see that, according to Rabbi Nechemiah, you could strain it, and then you'd be able to use it for something. Lavit mat Allah, amar Rabbi Simon, amar Rabbi Yosheb ben Levi, lo shenu ela shelo terako, aval terako asur. Yeah, but about that statement of Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Simon said in the name of Rabbi Yosheb ben Levi, that's only if you don't mix it. But once you mix it, then it's no good. And now, by pouring one into the other, it's going to get all mixed up, and then it's still going to be prohibited. You can only strain it out if it stays in place. And so, and we answered there also anyway. Hatam nameh shadim maniach midi apuma dechavita v'deshafile. No, it is possible actually to put a strainer on the top of the barrel that will filter it out. Maybe like a French press, and you kind of press it down, or you somehow get it from put it on top and pour it so that it strains without mixing. And so, in fact, it is possible to get the venom out without mixing. And so that's the case, that even though it's it was left open, exposed, but we're going to follow Rabbi Nechemiah, that's possible to strain out the venom, and that therefore the Kohen, although he still can't drink it because it's tevel, but he'd be able to use it to clean as the floor of his house. Now that we established that this Baraita has the opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah, we have a follow-up question. Can you take from a Tameh barrel as terumah for other Tameh barrels? Look at this following Braita where he says you cannot. V'hatanya, tormin mina Tameh ala Tameh mina Tahor ala Tahor, mina Tahor ala Tameh, v'alo mina Tameh ala Tahor. Tanakama says that you can take terumah from equals, Tameh for other produce as Tameh, or from Tahor, you can designate that as terumah for produce that is also tahor. You can also take from tahor as give that as tiruma, that's better, use that for tameh. But you cannot give to the kohen tameh produce and use that to allow to mitaken tahor produce. That you cannot do. That's Tanakama. Ibn Chemiah Omer, af min atameh latameh lo yitiru litrom ela b'shel demai. Ibn Chemiah says, no, even tatameh you can't. You can't give a kohen tameh tiruma in any case. You have to give him tahor. The only time that they permitted it is if it's demai. If you're not sure if this even requires to take tiruma, and it's just midirabanan, you have to take tiruma just in case because you got it from an amaretz, there it's permitted. So we answer, how could in that baraita, in that case, where you had 10 barrels, they were all tameh, how could you take tameh to tameh? And this is opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah. So the answer is, hachana b'shel demai, that case also was talking about, in fact, demai, they weren't totally tevel, they were only safek tevel, and that's why it was permitted. Amar mor, u'b'shemen lo yase ken mipnei hefsed kohen. At the end of that baraita, it said that when he has these 10 barrels and then one of them is leaking, he cannot designate that one that's leaking, it's oil, they're all tebel tameh, and he wants to take the one that's leaking anyway and designate that as terumat maaser. You cannot do that because then the kohen is going to lose out significantly. This is oil that he can use to burn, which is valuable, very valuable. Even though he can't eat it. And so now you're going to give him this, you're going to use that to make, to kosher all the other 9 barrels, and it's all going to leak out and he can't use it. So now we ask, so why are you saying oil is a big loss? And so you can't do that to the Kohen, you can't take that away because it can be lit. But wine also is a big loss because he can use it to put to make a nice aroma in his house and pour it on the floor. And if you say sprinkling on the floor, that's a very little thing. That's a very insignificant use. Shimuel said that for wine that you use to drink, you use a log is worth a selah. But for wine that you're going to use for sprinkle, it's worth double that. In other words, it's even more important. There's a greater benefit from the nice aroma that you get in the house from wine, and you spend even more on that. So now if you're going to designate for the Kohen this wine that's all dripping out, he's going to have a very significant loss, even more loss from the not being able to use it for the aroma is even greater than the loss of not being able to drink it. It's tameh, so we can't drink it, but use it for aroma, that's still, it's even a greater loss. So what's the difference? Why is there a difference between oil and wine? We're talking about new wine, grape juice. It doesn't have a nice aroma, so it can't be used for sprinkling. Wait, but you can leave it out, leave it around. You can put it in the basement till it becomes wine and then sprinkle it. It's not a good idea because there may be a mishap. Someone will forget that this is a teruma, teme'a, and they may come to drink it. And so you don't want to leave it around for a year or two or longer, right? By the time then, someone will forget. Now, why don't you worry about that for oil also? You're going to use the oil for burning, but maybe it's going to be left out, and then someone's going to come and drink it, not knowing that it's tiruma teme'a. The oil, you can put it in a disgusting vessel that once it's in there, no one will drink it, but still okay to burn it. Who cares? So take the wine also and put it in a disgusting vessel so that no one will drink it, and then you won't have a mishap. No one would do that because you want to sprinkle it for the nice aroma. If you put it in a disgusting, dirty, smelly vessel, then it's not going to have a nice aroma anymore. So no, they're not going to do that. Now that we mentioned the whole concept of worrying about that the mishap will happen, do you have to worry about it? That itself is a machloket between the houses, the Tanya. Chavit shel yain shel terumat shenitmet. Let's say you have a barrel of wine that's teruma and it became tameh. So now you're not allowed to drink it, but you could use it for sprinkling. So what should you do with it? Bet Shammai omerim tishafecha kol. Bet Shammai says, pour it out right away, even though technically you could sprinkle it, but we don't want people to come to an error. So you see, Bet Shammai worries about that. Bet Hillel says, pour it on the floor, make a nice aroma. So he does not worry about a mishap happening. Now, he says, I can decide between Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai. I can make a compromise position. If you have it in the house already, so then sprinkle it on the floor because you could do that right away and you don't have to worry that someone's going to drink it because you're sprinkling it now. But if you have it out in the field, then by time you bring it to the house on the way, someone might forget and get mixed up and drink it. So, you know what? I can make a compromise position. Or another compromise position, if it's old wine, so then pour it out and follow Bet Hillel for old wine because then it smells nice. And if it's new wine, like grape juice, and it has no smell, then pour it on the floor. It's no good. And there follow Bet Shammai because you're not going to leave it around for a year or two until it becomes wine and smells good. And so that's a way to compromise. But the other sages told Rabbi Ishmael, a third decision is not a conclusive halakha. In other words, if you said halakha kebet hilel, fine, then we'll agree with you, right? Oh, you decided halakha bet hilel, we'll respect your opinion. But you're not saying a halakha that's either like bet hilel nor like bet shammai. This compromise position is actually neither. It's a new position. So therefore, we don't have to follow you for halakha. You're just making up a whole third opinion. Instead, we can follow one of the other opinions, presumably that of Bet Hillel. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.